Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of April, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. The state statisticians will update crop progress in their regions, and we'll hear from Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I. He penned an article about the quarterly grain stocks report in yesterday's FarmDoc Daily website. It takes a look at the price of not old crop soybeans, but new crop soybeans and how that could change based on a glimmer that showed up in that last grain stocks report that suggests USDA at the end of this marketing year may adjust harvested number of bushels for soybeans. We'll hear about that from Daryl, and then as we close out our half hour, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. That with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for the Tuesday afternoon. May contract in the corn pit at $3.73 was a nickel lower for the day, down 5 cents. July contract at $3.80, 4¾ lower, and September at $4.25 lower, finished $3.87¾. December or the new crop corn at $3.97½, down 3¾, and next year's March at $4.07¾, down 3½ cents. From the soy complex, May beans at $9.75¼ were down 2¼. Quarter for the day. July at 9.76¾, 2¾ lower, and the August at 9.73¾, down 2 cents. September 9.62, 2 lower, rather down $0.01¾. In November at 9.56¾, down 1½. January beans of next year down $0.01¼ at $9.63¼. Bean meal at $3.15.80, that finished $2.70 lower, and the bean oil at $31.82, up 23 cents. Soft red winter wheat in the May contract at $5.03¼, up 2 cents. July at $5.25¼, also up 2 cents for the day. The hard red winter wheat in the July at $5.19, a penny higher for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the day like this. In the nearby contract, April at $156.35, a dollar higher. The June at $146.77½, up 90 cents. And the feeder cattle were 37½ cents higher at $212.20. This is the closing market report.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
From the CME Group, the lean hogs finished the day at $71.47½. They were $1.20 higher in the May contract. June at $77.57½ were $2 and a nickel higher. Outside markets show the crude oil now at $56.57½ a barrel. That's a down $1.30 for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 2¼ cents lower at $1.85½. And the gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price, 3¼ cents lower at $1.89¼ per gallon. Natural gas for the day on its last trade is at $2.57⁄6. That's up 4 cents. And ethanol futures finished at $1.63¼. A settlement price a penny and a half higher. Dow Jones Industrial Average now about 56 points lower at 17,887. The gold around $1,203 is $9.25 higher. And the U.S. dollar index at 98.2 is up 0.40 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Yet sunny skies, a high of 62 degrees on a west wind at around 30 miles an hour, and it will gust all the way to 44, so it's windy. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers, mainly between midnight and 3 a.m., mostly cloudy and a low of 39. And then tomorrow, sunny skies and 54 degrees. Again, it'll be breezy with a northwest wind at 13 to 20. That will gust all the way to 25. And on Wednesday evening, patchy frost after 3 a.m., otherwise mostly clear. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 21st day of April. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, is joining us to take us through what happened in the marketplace today. Hey, thanks, Wayne, for being with us. Why don't you start with the numbers as they came out from the Crop Progress Report yesterday, what you thought when you saw them. We'll, of course, have an update from the state statisticians in about 4 or 5 minutes here.
Well, the corn numbers, of course, come in lower than what the average guess was, under 10%. Illinois had some pretty good progress. Indiana didn't, because we've been wayer than you have. And the western part of Illinois, northwestern part of Illinois, made some pretty good progress there. We weren't that far off the average numbers, but it was lower than what they were doing. And then, of course, the wheat ratings. They were expecting to improve the 2% that they took off the week before, and they stayed the same. And, of course, we didn't get any bean numbers. So, basically, we saw the south sort of catch up. There's not as many acres that will probably be planted to beans that were considered that could have been a week ago out of the Delta area. And, it looks like if we can get clear weather through this week that into next week, looks like the last week, April and on, when we should get some corn planted here in the Midwest. So, all in all, it was looked like it could have been a little bit friendly yesterday, and then all that silly news about the H1N5 or whatever it is.
That's correct. The bird flu, the avian flu that is now making its way through not only turkey flocks in Minnesota, which was the biggest concern. It came up from the west as they were making some flights north on, I suppose, Canadian geese making their flyway going north. Now showing up in chickens in Iowa, we'll have the Secretary of Agriculture for Iowa, Bill Northey, a couple of bites from him a little bit later in the program, too. People are worried about it. It's starting to make its way not only into our news, because we've been talking about it for a while, but it's showing up on the national news now as well.
It is. I mean, and it is a big deal. There's probably 5.3 million birds that are infected and will probably be destroyed. And, that's not something you like to see, just killing all those birds on TV. And that either does affect, psychologically as well as that. But we do have 9.2 billion chickens and birds and turkeys that we are raising in America. So it is a small percentage. But that will affect the feed. Birds are very intensive users of bean meal and corn, and that was what sort of got in the corn and the bean market in the overnight.
And did we see that effect mostly in bean meal, or was it directly in the beans?
Well, I think it was in the bean meal, and then basically the bean meal, pulled the beans down along with it. But it was the meal factor there, of course. Here we're getting to the point where we're finally getting caught up, and the meal basis is weakened up a little bit because we finally got the pipeline full and had some rail cars available because of the crude slowing down. So along the way, that is one of the things that did sort of hit us. And, of course, as we're seeing Argentina starting to offer, have some meal available now and more beans available as their harvest progress, it's not a good time that we decide we're going to use less.
Yeah, can you talk just a little bit more about that? Because April, May is the time we start really to see some of the soybean crop come out of Argentina and Brazil, meaning it's finally made its way to the export facilities and really works into the market on the world trade, doesn't it, at this time of year?
Oh, I mean, yeah. As we looked at the ship lineup to load at the Gulf, there were no Chinese ships this week. I mean, and last week I think we had, two or three. Basically, so we're going to see our shipments of going to China really slow down. Argentina down there, remember that our dollar is strong, theirs is weak, and foreign countries can buy Argentine meal, quite a bit cheaper than the U.S. meal. And it is there, and it's ready to ship out, and the wait line at their harbors are not that bad right now. So, we're losing out in the world trade on the meal that way. And, of course, we've lost out on some of the other stuff to cheaper prices around the world, too.
Turning your attention directly to livestock, I'd like to talk a little bit about cattle. Both feeder cattle and live cattle have had some really tough times, though they managed to bounce a little bit today. We have a report due at the end of the week. Where do you see that market?
Well, I think that yesterday was, I mean, it was a real sell-off, and, you know, it was awfully hard between Friday and Monday that way. Today we did see we got about half of it back, and I think that we're probably, you know, floating back and forth. The one thing I do want to mention is, you know, look at eight feeder cattle on the board. They're trading, May feeder cattle are trading at 206.82, and you can't hardly find feeder cattle for under 250 if you go to the sale barns. So it's sort of an unreal market there, Todd. So it's one of those really scary things and not good to hedge in. But, you know, we did look for a sell-off in the cattle here that come along, and I think we're getting down pretty close to where we're going to start stabilizing now, because April cattle will be going off the board, and the Junes are down that 146 and around the 145 to 150 levels where we think the live cattle should be.
Anything else we need to talk about before I let you go for the day?
That's about it, Todd.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana, and joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org anytime you'd like. We post all of our agricultural programming there not long after it airs on our radio station. The numbers that you'd find in terms of the times on the website, by the way, are the times we expect to have those updated on the website, not the times that they are broadcast on our radio stations. If you'd like to hear it earlier, it is possible. We do stream it live. All you have to do is hit stream up there at the top of the page at willag.org. This morning, you may have noted, like I did, that the national news has picked up on the avian flu that has been infecting turkey flocks across the United States, especially in Minnesota and parts of Iowa. Now there is a chicken flock in Iowa that has been infected as well. This is the second case of the high path avian bird flu. It was confirmed by USDA yesterday. It's in a commercial laying flock that's owned by Sunrise Farms. That's out of Harris, Iowa, for those who are regular listeners. It is not too terribly far from the Everly and Esterville, Iowa, Anderson's facilities that we talked to on Friday afternoon about the grain markets to the north and the west of there near Spencer, Iowa, if you're more familiar with that in the very northern and north-central part of the state. Iowa Ag Secretary Bill Northey is from that area. He says this is the largest flock that's been impacted by the virus so far, with some 5.3 million hens.
It's a flock in Osceola County up in northwest Iowa. It's a large chicken layer flock. First time that we've had this, and I think only maybe the second time that it's been found in a layer flock. In this case, the capacity to that farm is 5.3 million birds, and it's in enough of the barns on that farm that the whole site is considered infected.
Even though the H5N2 virus has now spread to chickens in Iowa, Northey says they aren't changing their protocol in the state regarding prevention or response.
I think the strategies are still the same. We believe the quarantines will prevent the spread from these farms. We're not sure how many wild bird to chickens or turkey contact there has been, and whether we're nearing the end of this or whether it continues to ramp up.
Iowa is the largest egg producer in the nation, with nearly 1 in 5 eggs coming from the state. While the infected flock represents less than 10% of the nearly 60 million laying hens in Iowa, Northey says concern is growing.
It's concerning certainly to all those that are impacted by it. If you have a farm with a capacity of 5.3 million layers and you're out of operation for probably months, all the costs of euthanizing those birds and the loss of the market, that's a big deal. And we don't know how much more we'll see before this is all done. It certainly wouldn't surprise us to see some more in some of the other flocks that we have.
Bill Northey says domestic sales of poultry and egg products will continue to move as avian influenza presents a very low risk to humans. The existing poultry export bans remain in place. Let's check now. The crop progress reports is released by the United States Department of Agriculture. Of the 18 states that it surveys for corn planting, 16 are now reporting some of the corn has been sown. Only North Dakota and Pennsylvania have not reported any numbers. They normally, on the five-year averages, are 2% planted and 4% planted at this time of year. Of the 16 states that have reported, 9% of the nationwide crop is now in the the ground. That compares to a rolling five-year average of 13%. 16% of the winter wheat crop, by the way, has headed at this point. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 15%. It is said to be in 39% fair and 35% good condition, 7% excellent condition. That compares to 39, 35, and 7 from the previous week, and 33, 29, and 5 from the previous year. Now here are the Corn Belt state statisticians with updates from their regions.
This is Brian Gallagher, agricultural statistician for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report. Weekend rain slowed field work in Iowa. Activities for the week included manure hauling, tillage, oat seeding, anhydrous application, and some corn planting. A pair of storm systems brought a widespread rain to Iowa this past reporting week. Statewide average precipitation for the week as a whole was 1.51 inches, while normal for the period is 0.85 inches. Temperatures for the week as a whole averaged 7.8 degrees above normal. The warmest temperatures occurred Thursday through Sunday, with a high of 82 degrees at Donelson on Friday. Despite the above-average temperatures, a freeze was recorded over portions of Iowa on Tuesday morning, with Elkader the cold spot at 27 degrees. Soil temperatures at the 4-inch depth as of Sunday were averaging in the low 50s in northwest Iowa to the low 60s in the southeast part of the state. Soil temps are expected to drop with cooler weather forecasted throughout the coming week. Topsoil moisture levels rated 86% adequate to surplus. Subsoil moisture levels rated 80% adequate to surplus. North central Iowa reported the highest soil moisture levels. Statewide, 7% of the corn acreage has been planted, 4 days ahead of last year, but equal to the five-year average. 74% of the oat crop has been planted, over 2 weeks ahead of last year and 1 week ahead of the average. Oats emerged reached 21%, 1 week ahead of last year, but fractionally behind normal. This is Brian Gallagher reporting from USDA NASS Iowa Field Office.
This is Todd Ballard, Deputy Director with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, serving Illinois. Planting was in full swing last week as producers took advantage of the drier weather. Corn planting increased to 15% complete, but still remained behind the average of 21%. Last year at this time, only 4% was planted. The southeast and southwest districts were the only two districts without any corn planting due to wet fields. Winter wheat headed was at 1% compared to 10% for the five-year average. Oat planting progress increased to 69% compared to 49% last year and 65% for the five-year average. Statewide temperatures averaged 60.5 degrees, 6.9 degrees above normal. Statewide precipitation averaged 0.38 inches, 0.57 inches below normal. Winter wheat condition was rated at 1% very poor, 9% poor, 36% fair, 47% good, and 7% excellent. This has been Todd Ballard with the Heartland Region of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, serving Illinois.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop progress and condition report. Favorable conditions allowed Minnesota farmers to plant over one-third of the expected small grain acreage and over one-half of the sugar beet acreage. This was the most productive planting week for small grain growers in 30 years. There were 5.7 days suitable for field work during the week. Some areas of the state received precipitation during the week, but farmers are still concerned about the lack of moisture, especially with the windy days. Corn reached 12% planted in Minnesota. That's over 2 weeks ahead of last year and 4 days ahead of the five-year average. Oat and spring wheat seeding were both over 50% complete, while barley was just under 50% seeded. Small grain seedings were over 4 weeks ahead of last year and almost 3 weeks ahead of average. There were scattered reports of small grains starting to emerge across the southern two-thirds of the state. Spring wheat planting was 64% complete, the most planted by this date in over 30 years. 20% of the expected potato acreage was planted. That's over 3 weeks ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of average. For the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Jessica Klatt with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. With the Indiana Crop and Weather Report, warmer temperatures and reduced rainfall yielded the first opportunity to plant corn this week. The statewide average temperature for the week was 59.4 degrees, 6.8 degrees above normal. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.03 to 2.12 inches, with a statewide average of 0.41 inches. Winter wheat jointed was 15% complete this week, compared to 21% last year and 35% five-year average. Winter wheat continues to green up and be top-dressed, although there has not been much new growth in the fields. Some farmers have begun to till up wheat fields due to the lack of nutrients, stagnant conditions, and slow growth. The warm temperatures have firmed up fields enough to get some planters out to begin planting this season's corn crop. Farmers are applying nitrogen, knifing and pneumonia, and spreading fertilizer in the fields to gear up to plant as the weather conditions improve. There are some concerns that the wet and cool spring conditions may limit weed control due to fewer burn downs. Other activities for the week included picking up seed, fixing tile, tilling fields, and hauling grain. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending April 19, 2015. This is Jessica Klatt reporting.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates during the growing season of crop progress across the Corn Belt. Last year, U.S. farmers harvested a record-sized soybean crop, and the price of soybeans plummeted, but not yet as far as the most negative Nellies expected. There is a glimmer in some of the USDA numbers that might explain why. This glimmer won't raise the current price of soybeans. There are plenty of them around, and that's not going to change, writes University of Illinois Ag economist Daryl Good in his April 20th weekly outlook. You can find it online at the FarmDoc Daily website. It could lend a supportive hand, however, to the price of new crop soybeans. Frankly, this isn't very clear, but here's the short version. If USDA has consumption of soybeans for this year right, and the uncertainty in the March 1 stocks on hand for soybeans has correctly hinted at a smaller harvested crop last fall, then a correction would be due in the September 30th release to the grain stocks report. This happened last year, says Daryl Good.
September 1 stocks a year ago, for example, were 38 million bushels smaller than expected just 3 weeks before the release of the stocks report. The level of uncertainty this year is magnified by the March 1 stocks estimate that hinted that last year's soybean crop may have been overestimated.
How much of an overestimate remains to be seen. It's a glimmer of hope for the price of new crop soybeans, a glimmer that depends greatly on the pace of old crop soybean consumption. Now, about 45% of the soybeans raised in the United States are exported, so we'll focus on that number. USDA, in the April estimates, said this marketing year, 1.79 billion bushels of soybeans would be shipped out of the country. The total export commitments have already reached this number, says Good.
However, some current outstanding sales may be canceled, and it is typical for some sales to get carried into the next marketing year. Additional net sales of about 60 million bushels are probably needed if exports are to reach the USDA projection for the year.
So the export number looks safe, as does the domestic crush figure. USDA could adjust either of these going forward in the monthly reports, but today this looks unlikely. It leaves the quarterly grain stocks number as the tipping point. There are two more of these reports remaining for the old crop, June and September. Even when those numbers come out, it isn't clear how USDA will use them until the following WASDE, or supply-demand table, is released. So it will be October before any glimmer could be truly identified. Listening to Illinois Public Media. We'll be back in 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast. I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Chocolate-Covered Cashews Day. Small quantities of cashews were imported into the U.S. as early as 1905. World trade started after representatives of the General Food Corporation discovered these nuts during their mission to India in the early 1920s. It's also St. Buenos Day, patron against cattle diseases. On this day in agricultural history in 1835, Samuel Slater died. Slater was an English-American mechanical engineer who founded the American Cotton Textile, establishing the first successful cotton mill in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and others in the New England region.
In 1838, John Muir was born. Muir was a naturalist who was largely responsible for the establishment of Sequoia National Park in California in 1890. Muir drew attention to the devastation of mountain meadows and forests by sheep and cattle, leading to his role as father of the national park system. And in 1915, Garrett Hardin was born. Hardin was an American biologist and author known for his classic essay on ecology and social ethics, Tragedy of the Commons, which was published in 1968. The story was a parable about farmers who allowed to graze their cattle in one field as much as they wanted to. Each acted in their own self-interest, and the field was eventually destroyed. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here to look at the weather forecast. Don, thanks for taking the time with us out of your Cheyenne, Wyoming office. Tell me about the rainfall we've had over the last several days, how widespread, how much, how cool the temperatures will be, and more importantly, how quickly you think farmers in the Corn Belt will be able to get back into the field.
Okay, well, first of all, out in the western areas, the wheat country, just fantastic precipitation last week with just what the doctor ordered, a real slow-moving storm. Rainfall amounts range from 1 to 4 inches with well over 2 inches, basically the average, and this would be over most of Kansas except the extreme southwest corner, all of Nebraska, all of northeastern Colorado, into the central and western areas of South Dakota, and into areas of Wyoming. Also, Oklahoma, Texas saw amounts that were in that 1 to 4 inch range. So great news for those areas. Now, for the Corn Belt in the Midwest, it's still going to be cool. We're still looking at a very strong area of low pressure over New England and the Great Lakes that's pumping northwest wind flow into the area. So through the course of this week, temperatures are going to be averaging below normal in the Corn Belt. We do expect that we do see some warmer temperatures arriving by the weekend. With those warmer temperatures, we'll probably be a little bit of weekend rain as well.
Have you looked at other parts of the world in the Northern Hemisphere where they will be either bringing a wheat crop out of dormancy, that would be in France, parts of Ukraine, Russia, and or beginning the corn planting season, for instance, in China?
Well, right now, I don't see any areas that stick out as being real big problem areas in terms of the emergence right now. There are some dry pockets in some areas of Eastern Europe and over into Russia. But if we look over into China, as we look over into other areas, they're likely going to be heading into the season with at least good soil moisture profiles. We're looking at the coldest weather in the globe, still right over here at home in the eastern side of the United States.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can listen to it again anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. It is streamed live at 2:06 in the afternoon from that website, or you can pick it up as a podcast anytime you would like. It's right there on our website at willag.org. Have a great day. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. If you have questions or comments, please do give me a call or email me at tgleason@illinois.edu. Phone number is 217-333-9600. 9697.